on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and it is Tuesday, November 26th, 2024, which means only one thing. We are now 2 days away from my personal favorite holiday, Thanksgiving. But that doesn't mean that we can take the day off today. Sure, at the end of this week, we'll give thanks for all the great things in our lives, our families, our friends, what really gets us through each and every day. But still, we have some work to do here. And with that in mind, the objective of this podcast, this radio program, this YouTube series, is to help you become a better and more informed investor. And how do we do that? Well, we bring some educational items to the table. We bring some actionable material to the table. But most importantly, we want to hear directly from you because you are the main focus of this show. So anytime, 7 days a week, over on YouTube in the comment section or at our phone number, 888-99-CHART, which is back up and operational, we'd love to hear your voicemails or over the next hour, your live calls. Now, in just a bit, we'll tackle today's market performance and run down the show topics, but let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, Justin. Luke, I would like to hear your opinion about KMI. Thank you, guys, for your time to answer my question. Thanks, bye.
Ticker KMI is Kinder Morgan Inc., KMI, and it's an energy storage and pipeline transportation company. It owns and operates pipelines and terminals for getting mostly natural gas to market. Right? About 99% of its revenue comes from the United States. Natural gas, again, makes up 60% of its total revenue. Now, over the past 5 years, you've seen really not great growth. Specifically, in the past 3 years, you've seen actually revenue fall from $19.5 billion in 2022 to about $15 billion this year. In that time, though, margins have expanded, right? From 2021, it was about 10%. Now, net margins at about 17%. And the reason why I actually like these midstream pipeline companies, Justin likes them as well. I think he's mentioned this before, is really going with what the reality is of the American energy industry. The slogan during the election was drill, baby, drill, right? That's been a slogan for a decade. But what the energy companies actually don't want to do is drill, right? They've come out and said, we are drilling enough. What they want is an investment within the infrastructure to more cost-effectively and more quickly get the supplies of what they have to various marketplaces. And you've seen over the past 4 years, U.S. oil production, U.S. natural gas production explode. And so with that in mind, with what the energy sector really wants, this updated pipeline system, companies like Kinder Morgan stand to do very well over the next 5 years. Now, with that being said, this company is kind of expensive, right? Trading at 22 times forward-looking earnings, average of about 16. It's at the upper end of its range in price to cash flow as well as price to sales. And so this is a company that's had a run-up. It's up 59% this year. It's up 61% over the past year, even with revenue falling, but with margins expanding. Its cash flow has been improving as well. It pays a pretty solid dividend. And so when you have companies like this that are thematically good, also companies that pay a good dividend, right? As interest rates fall on the shorter end, you may see more people moving into all this money that's been cash, moving into these dividend payers with growth potential. And so with all that being said, I would keep this on my watch list because it's a good company in a good business. But it's a little expensive right now. And I mean, you see that, right? You see the past 3 months, it's up 31%. So I'd wait for a pullback. I would still keep it on my watch list. That is Kinder Morgan, ticker KMI. Now we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic: direct indexing versus ETFs. Which investment strategy wins the game? One methodology offers personalized stock ownership and tax efficiency, while the other provides simplicity and cost-effective diversification. We will dig into the differences and who each strategy may be right for. We'll also talk about small caps, which have been doing particularly well post-election, but will that run in Trump 2.0 continue? We'll also touch on a tweet or a truth or whatever you want to call it from yesterday, in which Trump promised on day one to start his tariff hikes. What does that mean for markets? Did the market really believe what he's saying? And what could that mean for global trade? And lastly, should we have time at the end of the show? Emerging markets are kind of caught between large powers, right? If we have trade wars in 2025, what does that do to emerging market companies? So we'll dig into that at the end of the show if we have time. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on Walmart and one on money market funds, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going into a short break. On the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the Invest Talk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART. Yes, we fixed it. Our toll-free number is working once again.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important. But so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the InvestTalk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls.
If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
Looks like we got a live call.
Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. The numbers are in. InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your finance and investment questions 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Before we answer more of those investment and finance questions, let's dig into the market today. U.S. stocks were mostly higher as stocks ended near best levels. The S&P 500 set a fresh record. The Dow was up 28 basis points. S&P 500 up 57 basis points. NASDAQ up 63 basis points. And the Russell 2000 down 73 basis points after setting a fresh record high yesterday. Today's upside extended Monday's gains with the cyclical rotation still in focus. Big tech was mostly higher. GLP-1s boosted by a White House proposal to have them covered by Medicare. Software, hospitals, streaming, video games, utilities, data centers, cruise lines also all higher. Retail, building materials, industrial metals, chemicals, autos, rails among the laggards. We'll talk about the reasons why later in the show. Gold finished up about 10 basis points. Bitcoin down again, down 33.6%, back near the 90,000 level. Crude oil settled down 20 basis points as well after a truce and ceasefire was agreed to between the Israeli government and Lebanon. But really, the tariff threat was the big story of the day after Trump posted Monday night that as part of his first executive order, he will impose an additional 10% tariff on China and 25% tariffs on goods from Mexico and Canada. However, the tariff threat really not new, and more of a focus from the market is that it may just be a negotiating tactic, though we will have to wait until January to see how serious it will be. Earnings calendar still fairly busy with disappointing retail updates on the day, but still there's some pretty positive takeaways from the semi space. Fairly quiet elsewhere as we head closer to Thanksgiving on a holiday shortened trading week, but the upside narrative still focusing on continued support from systematic fund strategies, positive seasonality, and relatively dampened positioning, as well as a resilient macro backdrop to finish off the year. On the numbers side, Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index improved largely in line with expectations in November, and one-year inflation expectations fell to the lowest levels since March of 2020. New home sales, though, on the downside, fell at a much worse than expected rate of 17.3% month over month in October. And November FOMC minutes showed broad support for gradual reductions in rates, along with some uncertainty around the neutral rate. Nothing on the calendar for Friday when the stock market is scheduled to close at 1 Eastern. Remember, market is closed on Thursday. But until then, we'll have a lot more to talk about. Let's keep things moving. Play another listener question now. This came in earlier from Missouri.
This is Chris calling from Missouri. I just had a quick question about money market funds. I currently have a fund through Vanguard with a large sum of cash that's in the money market fund. Just have that readily available to make any purchases of stocks and other securities. But I guess my question is, should I be concerned with the amount that I have being insured by SIPC, because the fund itself is not insured by FDIC? It's probably close to $250,000. So just want to make sure that the money is safe with Vanguard. I really appreciate it. Thanks again.
That's a great question. So for those of you who don't know, SIPC, S-I-P-C, which stands for the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, what they do is they kind of act like the FDIC, but for these brokerage accounts where they cover up to $500,000 per customer, including a $250,000 limit for cash. And the reason why is, well, they have insurance in case the brokerage firm fails. Now, it doesn't cover for losses, right? If the market goes down, it's not going to cover you for your loss, but it's mainly if the entity that is your brokerage firm fails. Now, in this instance, what you're talking about is a money market fund. And money market funds tend to not lose value. That's the whole point, right? When they drop, when the NAV drops below a dollar per share, it's called breaking the buck. That means things are probably really bad. The last time that happened was during the 2008 financial crisis. And so in this situation, with the amount of money you have, which should be below the threshold that is being covered by SIPC, you should be fine. I've always said, when you have situations where you have money in a Vanguard money market fund, if the fund is compromised, if Vanguard's fund is compromised, right, a money market fund investing in incredibly safe securities for one of the largest asset managers on planet Earth, if that specific fund is compromised, we probably have a lot worse things to worry about, right? So generally speaking, SIPC is going to cover you there, so you should be good to keep in that fund. And yes, it is a good idea to keep things in a money market fund as you wait to invest them in the market at opportune times. Thanks for the call. Now, if people take the time to leave a InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them for their courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. And this one from Mr. Jonesy4014 on Qualcomm. It says, I am wondering if the recent pullback of Qualcomm is a reason to start an open position. Now, for those of you who don't know about Qualcomm, Qualcomm is a behemoth of a company. It is a semi company. They create semiconductor software and services related to wireless technologies. Now, as this pulls up here, well, my computer decided to freeze. Either way, it is a very, very large company, about $180 billion market cap company. Over the past year, 52 weeks, it's only up 22.84%, where the rest of the market is up slightly better than that over the past 52 weeks. It's also underperformed its industry this year by a lot. And its revenue has still grown pretty consistently over the past 5 years, up from $22 billion to $38 billion this year. Its net income grown pretty significantly from September 23 to September 24, from $7.3 billion to about $10 billion. And in that time, its margins are improving as well, from about 20.5%, its net margin, to about 25.9% this year. Now, taking a look at its cash flow, it's improving, and it is positive. That is certainly something that we like. Its debt levels are pretty modest for its size, about $15 billion. And now, recently, it has certainly had a pullback, down to about 156 over the past 3 months. It's down about 7%. I'm not sure how it's trading after hours, as there was news that there are really not as interested in an Intel deal as some may have thought before. But still, this is a pretty solid company with a solid balance sheet, right? We own this for clients. We sold a little bit out of it. We lowered our position back above 200, but we started to buy back a little bit near this range. And that's because this is a company that has a proven track record, a company that is a cash behemoth, right? Their cash flow is incredibly impressive. $11 billion free cash flow. Look at that cash flow growth over the past 5 years, from $3 billion to $11 billion. And so, again, this is a situation where I think it could be a good time to pick up shares of a company that has been solid for a while. Now we're moving into break, and still to come, my main focus point, more questions, more answers. Call me, 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk, your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to George from San Mateo, who has a question about index funds. How can I help you?
Yes, hi. My name is George Hubbard from San Mateo. And I'd like to ask, I'm a passive index fund investor. And I would like to ask if you had to choose between a large cap index fund or a total market index fund, which would you choose? An example would be like VV, Vanguard's VV, mm-hmm. Victor, or VTI, total market index fund.
Yeah, that's a great question. So if I had to choose between a large cap and a total market index fund, put simply, I would choose the total market index fund. And the reason why is because empirically, right, maybe not the past 5 years, but empirically speaking, what you tend to see is small and mid caps tend to outperform large caps. The reasons why is because investing is a risk return thing, right? And you're taking on larger risks with investing in small caps that have higher capital requirements, that have higher debt levels, higher costs of capital. And so investors over the long term tend to get rewarded for taking on those risks. It also just gives you broader exposure to a lot more potentially exciting areas of the market. And if you're talking about the funds you're talking about, you can do it at a relatively low cost. And so I think that investing in a total market index gives you that exposure that the large cap index just does not. Thanks for the call.
Great. And okay.
Oh no. Did you have another question?
Yes. I just wanted to say that those are just examples that the funds that I use are the FZROX, mm-hmm. Fidelity Zero Total Market Index, mm-hmm. and the FNILX, which is the Fidelity Large Cap Index. Both of those are the zero expense ratio.
Yeah, great. I mean, the answer is still the same, right? You're still getting better exposure to areas of the market, asset classes, which tend to do better over longer term time horizons.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the call. Now let's shift gears back to my main focus point, which is kind of about what George was just talking about, but a little bit different. And it's about direct indexing versus ETFs and which investment strategy might be right for you. Now, exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, have long been a cornerstone of diversified investment strategies because they offer tax efficiency and easy access to a range of assets. But a growing alternative, direct indexing, is gaining traction for its customization, but a different set of tax benefits. Direct indexing allows investors to buy individual stocks that replicate an index instead of purchasing an ETF. And what that does is it gives investors the flexibility to tailor their portfolios based on personal preferences, such as avoiding certain sectors or aligning the investment with maybe ethical or religious beliefs. For example, an investor concerned about overexposure to tech stocks, maybe they work at Microsoft, could exclude such positions in a direct indexing strategy, something not possible with broader ETFs. Another major advantage, probably the most major advantage of direct indexing, is the tax loss harvesting ability. Investors can sell underperforming stocks in their portfolios to offset capital gains elsewhere and reduce the overall tax liability of their total portfolio. Even in a strong market like this year, 2024, where the S&P 500 is up over 20%, more than 100 of its stocks have posted losses. Direct indexing lets investors capture those losses while still benefiting from the broader index's gains and therefore improving your after-tax returns. Cost is another consideration. ETFs are known for their low expense ratios, particularly those tracking indices, but the costs of direct indexing have become much more competitive. A lot of this is helped by the lower account minimums and the elimination of trading commissions. And because of that, some investors are actually thinking of doing another option, which is combining ETFs and direct indexing for a more hybrid approach. ETFs with their tax-efficient structure can serve as a foundation. They can give you broad asset class exposure, while direct indexing adds that layer of customization and those tax management benefits. This strategy is really meant for taxable accounts, right, where tax loss harvesting is most effective, but it can also be tailored to tax-advantaged retirement accounts. Ultimately, the choice between ETFs and direct indexing, or a combination of the two, comes down to your goals, right? Essentially, what an ETF is doing is you're buying, let's say, the S&P 500, whereas direct indexing says, all right, well, different securities in the S&P 500, they act similar to each other. They have higher correlations. We don't need to own all 500 in order to get a similar return with a tracking error budget. And by doing that, if one of these securities is down, well, we can sell that. We can take the loss, right? And we can buy another security that's going to have similar correlations to that and still have the overall exposure. It's called sampling, and it's a really beneficial way to invest. Direct indexing offers, like I said, a personalization benefit and tax benefits, while ETFs provide that simplicity and efficiency. And together, they can create a versatile strategy that aligns with your financial objectives. Now, I want to remind you once again that our toll-free number is working. All is fixed, so you can call now or leave your questions anytime at 888-99-CHART. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. Over half of U.S. workers plan to rely on Social Security for retirement. An alarming trend underscores the urgent need for individuals to rethink their retirement strategies and explore additional savings options. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend? Something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hi there, Luke and Justin. Longtime listener here, Matt from Minneapolis. Glad to see that the 888 number is back up and running again. I have a question for you, gentlemen. I'm looking for a long-term investment and hold on Walmart. Does a lot of different things, sells a lot of goods. Been watching it for a while. It did its split. Since it's done its split, it's gone up only nicely. It has a lot of good financial statistics about it, and it looks like it's going to keep going up here, especially over the holidays and into the new year. Hopefully, if there is a yield or tariffs, I'm saying, do increase, it won't hurt their financials at all. What do you guys feel about buying this stock and holding it for a long time? Thank you. I'll be listening on the show, waiting to hear your responses. Have a good day. Good holidays.
We are glad that the phone line is working again as well, and we're glad to hear from you. Now let's take a look at Walmart. That is ticker WMT. And I don't think I have to tell anybody what Walmart is, because it is a behemoth in the retail space. They have stores everywhere. They have a massive online retail space, which they have been investing in over the past couple years. And all they do is generate cash, $40 billion. In free cash flow, right? Their free cash flow, sorry, $13 billion in free cash flow this year. That is absolutely remarkable. Their revenue grows about 5% over the past 5 years on an annualized basis. And that's probably only going to continue to grow at a high percentage as they capture more and more of the online retail space. Now, their margins are about where you'd expect them to be for this business. Remember that retail stores like this, right? The Walmarts, the Targets, the Costcos, they don't really operate on high margins. Their net margin is only about 3%. And so one thing that you keyed in on, tariffs, right? The announcement of the 25% tariff on Canada and Mexico, 10% on China, something we'll talk about, means that they really do have to react by raising prices. There's not a lot of room for error here in terms of their margins. Now, they're a $719 billion market cap company with about $61 billion in debt. They've taken on some debt since 2021 during the pandemic, but not too much. That's about where they've been. Their interest coverage ratio, almost 11 times. So they really don't have that much leverage. As I mentioned, their cash flow is massive. Their operations, their operating cash flow is around $40 billion, which gets you to a free cash flow of about $13 billion. Their relative strength has been fantastic. And their growth has been, as I said, pretty solid. And so the question becomes, with this phenomenal, consistent dividend payer, it's only 1%, but darn is it consistent, is do we think that where it's currently trading just is justified, right? It's had a run. It's up 73% year to date, up 20% over the past 3 months, 75% over the past 52 weeks. But it's also trading really, really high. It is very stretched, 33 times forward-looking price to earnings, right? About 18 times its cash flow, the upper end of its range over the past 5 years. And so I think that right now the market is pricing in the Goldilocks scenario of tariffs being part of a negotiation strategy, maybe not being implemented on day one. I think there's a lot of downside risks to some of these names that are operating on very tight margins. And so I would keep it on my watch list. Walmart is an incredible name that is going to continue to be dominant, but it's just too expensive right now. Thanks for the call. I hope you all have checked out and told your friends and family to check out our InvestTalk YouTube channel. And when you head over there and you watch one of our videos and a question pops into your mind, you know, you don't have to call. You can just leave your question right there in the comment section, because we go through all those comments and we like to sort out those questions and we like to get to those questions as soon as we can. So let's get to one right now. This one from Ben Severin is on ticker NBIS. It says, wondering what you think of Nebius Group, NV, ticker NBIS. Well, Nebius Group is a European company. It builds AI infrastructure, including cloud platforms, GPU clusters, and tools for developers. And so you'd expect that they would be up pretty significantly over the past 52 weeks, and they're not really. They're up only about 16% over the past year. Interestingly enough, their return is matching over all of these time frames. So that's a little suspicious from my end. I don't know if that's an accurate reflection of their stock price. Oh, it's because they IPO'd in October of this year, or they started trading on this line in October of this year. And so the date is a little wonky because they may have been trading outside the US, but this is a US line of this company. And so the price return is going to be a little skewed. Regardless, we can still look at their fundamentals. Looks like it's up 35%, their revenue over the past 5 years. And the bulk of that was coming out of the pandemic, from $4.8 billion in revenue to $9.3 billion in 2023. And it's pretty solid growth, right? It's doubling in a two-year time horizon. But their free cash flow is negative. Free cash flow is negative, and their operating cash flow has been falling. And in that time, their margins have been falling as well. Now, they lost money in 2021. Then they made money in 2022. Last year, their margins started to compress back down to about 2.5% net margin. It's a $4.6 billion company, US dollar company, and it's got about $28 million in debt. So really not too much debt to speak of. So return on assets, though, it's only about 2.7%. Return on equity is only about 6.1%. And so I think that this company, which has underperformed its industry by about 23% this year, underperformed its industry by 76% in 2023, I think there are better options out there that stick within that theme. So on Nebius Group, ticker NBIS, going to have to pass. Now, I got one of my talking points on deck, but first, let's drop in another caller question.
What are your thoughts of ChargePoint, ticker CHPT? The stock looks like it has been beaten down lately and almost at its all-time low. Instead of picking one EV company, what are your thoughts of getting into this EV charging company? Thanks. Bye.
Let's take a look at ChargePoint. To your CHPT, what they do is they manufacture and support networked EV charging stations. How's their growth been over the past 5 years? Pretty solid. It looks like up until January of last year, they were going pretty well, from about $144 million in sales to about $506 last year, projected to be $407 next year. And that growth is fine, though it's falling off, and that's certainly not something that we want to see in a company that does not make any money to speak of. What about their free cash flow? Well, it got more and more negative, right? It got from about $194 million in 2022 to $351 million negative in the red in 2024, and it's coming back down closer to zero, but still it's not making money and its cash flow is negative. And that leads me to believe it has a very high burn rate, which means they're probably issuing a bunch of shares, and they are, up from 300 million shares in 2021 to 400 million shares this year. And so the fundamentals look weak. They only have $303 million in debt, but they're only a $539 million market cap company. And if they keep diluting shareholders, well, it makes sense that their relative strength has been abysmal since 2022. They're currently trading at $1.15. And so I think with ChargePoint, who fundamentally looks weak, who technically looks weak, whose cash flow is really falling off of a cliff, going all the way back to when they started issuing, whose short interest is 33%, I'm going to have to pass. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got another live call, and that's a good thing. Sid from North Carolina, you have a question about BWA. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Hi, Luke. Thank you for taking time. Yes, I do have a very small position. I picked up last year around 44, 46. Since then, it is down, and this year it is just a sideways. But they are paying a dividend. I'm not sure if I keep on holding. This year is sideways, so it's not going down anymore. What's your opinion for the long term? Thank you so much.
Great. Well, let's take a look at BorgWarner. BorgWarner, ticker BWA. And what they do is they design and manufacture systems for the transportation industry. So electric, hybrid, conventional gas vehicles. They have transmission technologies, intake and exhaust management systems. But most of their revenue comes from that air management system and their drivetrain systems. Geographically, looks like 16% of their revenue comes from the United States, 21% from China, 12% from Mexico. Here's a good one to take a look at their supply chains here. While that's loading, let's look at their balance sheet. They have about $4.7 billion in debt on a $7.6 billion market cap company. They've been buying back shares, which we like. They pay a solid dividend, 1.25%. Not a lot of short interest out there. Their cash flow, though, has been about as stable as their price has been over the past year. Now, in terms of their partners, it looks like their major suppliers are out of China, Taiwan, and a little bit from the U.S., and so they might suffer asymmetrically from tariffs come January. Let's look at the revenue growth. From about $10 billion to $14 billion in 5 years, it's pretty solid. A drop-off from 2023, right? They made about, they had $15.8 billion in revenue. That's fallen, and that has fallen consistently. That continues to fall into this year, down from 14.1 last year to about 14 this year. The free cash flow growth over the past 5 years is negative as well, and certainly that's not something we like to see. Their free cash flow peaked at about $846 million in 2022, now about $692 million this year. What about their margins? Well, their margins have fallen, right? From 8.8% 5 years ago was the peak, projected to be 6.8% this year. And so this seems to be a company that's struggling a little bit with costs, right? Their EBITDA margin is falling as well. And so they may asymmetrically, given that their suppliers are primarily in China, 21% of the revenue comes from China, 12% comes from Mexico, they may suffer a little bit. And so just because a company is paying a solid dividend doesn't mean that it is the right company to be in. Sure, it's paying you a dividend, but it's more than just the dividend. It's about the principal. What are you invested in? How is that performing? And it's underperformed its industry each of the past 3 years. This year by 29%, underperformed the S&P 500 by 30%. And so, yes, it's trading sideways. That's great. It's paying this dividend to you, though. The dividend is projected to be cut this year, and it has actually fallen over the past 3 years. And so this is all telling me that this is probably a name that you would want to get out of. I think there are better opportunities elsewhere, even if you're just trying to get a solid, consistent dividend. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about small caps. The Russell 2000 is the main index for U.S. small cap stocks, and it hit a record high for the first time in 3 years on Monday, signaling renewed investor optimism following Donald Trump's recent election victory. The index rose over 2% on Monday, closing at $2,442.03, fueled by the expectations that smaller, domestically focused companies could benefit most from Republican-led policies like corporate tax cuts and deregulation. Since Election Day on November 5th, the Russell 2000 has climbed 10%, eclipsing its previous peak, which was set in November 2021. Smaller companies, which have struggled in recent years due to rising interest rates and recession fears, are now gaining momentum. And so the election outcome may have provided the catalyst it needed to spark this equity market turnaround. Why? Well, they have improving earnings. And with that, small caps could outperform larger stocks in the months ahead. Now, the rally in small caps also reflects a broader shift in investor focus. In the first half of 2024, massive tech stocks dominated market gains. But attention is now rotating to the more rate-sensitive sectors, which includes these small-cap companies. This rotation has been supported by the appointment of Scott Bessent as Treasury Secretary, a move seen as market-friendly, which should in turn boost confidence in riskier assets. Now, while the Russell 2000 has outperformed in the second half of 2024, it still lags behind the market cap-weighted S&P 500 for the year overall. Higher debt levels among small caps could pose risks if inflation resurges or interest rates cuts slow down, which they may, according to the most recent Fed minutes. Economists like Dan Isvin from PIMCO caution that Trump's economic policies might actually overheat the economy. And what that would do in turn is drive up inflation and may further disrupt the Federal Reserve's plans. While small caps do tend to thrive in periods of growth, they're particularly vulnerable to higher interest rates, right? Because they carry more debt. They have rising input costs due to their leverage and shorter-term debt structures. And so for now, the Russell 2000's resurgence really reflects this growing optimism about economic growth, about an economy that is potentially achieving a soft landing, and about that tax and deregulatory policy support going forward. But there are risks on the horizon, right? Their input costs tend to be higher. They are more susceptible to the risks, the cost risks of tariffs. And so this is mostly just some exuberance about what people see as the potential path forward. And so its future performance will therefore depend on how well these smaller companies are able to navigate these challenges in an economic environment that is changing, in a policy environment that is changing, in a political environment that is changing. And so for the next several months, well, we may continue to see moves higher, but the longer term effects of the policy will be seen next year. Now we're headed into another break. And when we come back, we'll answer more of your finance and investment questions. We'll go through one more talking point, and hopefully, if you feel like it, give me a call live. Get your questions in now, because this is our final break 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it?
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
Well, first off, never take one man's opinion as gospel, including my own.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, if I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it?
If this gets to 170 to 175 in that range, that's where I'd pick it up.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is James. I have a question on the money market fund, PCOXX. Is there any risk involved in this investing in this fund? Please advise. Thank you.
So let's take a look at this money market fund. I believe he said CCOXX. Either way, I can't find it on here. It could just be that I didn't hear it correctly, but we kind of talked about this earlier. And what we talked about earlier is what a money market fund is, right? It's investing in short-term government securities, government treasuries, right? And its job is to maintain the dollar, maintain that $1 net asset value. And generally speaking, they do that. And when they don't do that, well, then there tend to be larger stresses. And so you tend to have bigger issues because either there's issues with short-term treasuries or those commercial papers, or there are issues with the fund sponsor. But either way, money market funds tend to be the safest investment vehicles for keeping your cash with generating interest, just because the nature of the of what they are investing in and the regulatory burden of operating them. And generally speaking, you're not going to see much of a difference between various money market funds. And so when I advise people to who want to keep their money in money market funds, what I say is look for issuers of those funds that are respected large institutions that have low fees, because these should not be high fee funds. And from there, you can nitpick around a couple basis points of return. But generally speaking, money market funds, unless there's times of high economic stress or rather high financial stress, which tends to have a lot of people have high withdrawals in one period of time, generally money market funds tend to be safe. Although it's important to keep in mind, there are always risks with investments. Thanks for the call. Now, one more story about what may potentially be coming down the pike next year. Donald Trump has wasted no time making bold moves ahead of his return to the White House. On November 25th, the president-elect announced steep tariffs on imports, not just on China, but from Canada and Mexico. 25% on goods from those countries and an additional 10% levy on all Chinese imports. These measures, he says, will remain until the flow of drugs and illegal immigration into the U.S. is halted. The ripple effects of this announcement are already shaking some financial markets. Currency in Canada and Mexico tumbled following Trump's remarks. The peso dropped 1.4% to near 21 to the dollar, while the Canadian dollar slid 80 basis points to its lowest point in over 4 years. Meanwhile, businesses in the U.S. are scrambling to stockpile goods before the tariffs might take effect. The National Retail Federation projects a 14% year-over-year increase in import volumes for November. And the potential economic fallout is significant. For American consumers, higher tariffs mean higher prices for goods, from Canadian crude oil to cars made in Mexico. Automakers like Ford, General Motors, and Toyota, who rely on Mexican factories to supply the U.S. market, are among those most at risk. American companies dependent on cross-border trade will face disruptions, while Canada and Mexico stand to suffer even greater losses. Roughly 80% of Mexican exports and 78% of Canadian exports are destined for the U.S., leaving them highly exposed. And while China might breathe a sigh of relief that Trump proposed tariffs on Chinese goods is lower than the 60% he previously said, the 10% levy still threatens to weaken the yuan by 2%, potentially hitting a 17-year low. Now, Trump's tariff also raised questions about the future of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, the USMCA, the trade deal that replaced NAFTA that he negotiated during his first term. The tariffs could violate USMCA terms and put both Mexico City and Ottawa on, or rather, both Mexico City and Ottawa are racing to find ways to mitigate the damage. Canadian leaders have floated the idea of striking a separate bilateral trade deal with the U.S., but their efforts seem to have fallen flat, while Mexico took a more aggressive stance, saying that they might consider retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. For now, Trump's aggressive trade stance signals a priority on protectionism with far-reaching consequences for global commerce. One thing we know, the economic impact will be widespread, but American consumers will ultimately pay the price for this tariff-driven strategy. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. Remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number. Just go over to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. This is a free and confidential service. Also, if you haven't heard yet, we can help you optimize the potential of your 401k. It all starts over at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.